Support for Dave in the City is made in part by Amazon. Ditkow.com has a special link to the complete Star Trek collection, and you pay nothing. That's right, a free trial of Amazon Prime with access to the entire Star Trek library. The original series, the Next Generation, the movies, everything. It even includes that documentary, Trekkies. It is yours at Amazon Prime. Start your free trial by going to Ditkow.com, then click the Star Trek Collection banner.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting...
Oh! Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that poor Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big Open Championship recap show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in steamy Southern California. The heat wave has hit us, and it's just going to get that much hotter over the next couple days. But we hope you're here to enjoy a little bit of cool-down time with the three of us, John in Connecticut, Mike in North Jersey, and yours truly here, Dave Medina, on what was a really, really great Open Championship. My goodness, we had some incredible play by two guys we hadn't heard from in a while, Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson. Now, Mickelson's had a few majors before, but we have not seen him win a major since he won that Open Championship 3 years prior. So that was a big moment. He won convincingly. But here, he was neck and neck with Stenson, who was still looking for his first major championship. It started with Mickelson having an incredibly hot first round. I mean, he was like 10 under. I think it was like 10 under, 9 under. Unbelievable score in the beginning. And then others started to catch up with him. But by Saturday, it was just a two-man race. It was Mickelson, it was Stenson, and they were right at each other the entire way, even into Sunday. They were both hitting great shots. They were having a great short game. They were making their putts. Everything was hitting, but Stenson was just that much better. It was just an incredible, a really good week of golf. And especially for two guys. Like, the rest of the field, I can't really speak to. But for these two, it was really something special. And now to really break it down, let's go ahead and bring in once again our golf panel. And that would be John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey. We'll start with John. John, welcome to the program. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good, Dave. Thanks for having me back on. Exciting tournament to discuss, so we'll get right to it, I guess.
Absolutely. And let's also introduce Mike to the program. Mike, welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Well, I think we have to lead off with the terrible news that Tiger Woods is not going to be playing in the PGA Championship next week because, you know, golf has just been so boring without him, right? Sport's going to die. Everyone else sucks. Why bother watching?
Why watch? Yeah.
Seriously, who wants to see him shoot 80 at majors right now? I mean, come on, that's what he'd shoot if you had to play some of these courses.
Hey, the funny thing, too, is that the golf ratings, I know, did very well for NBC Golf Channel. So I thought no one watched golf if he wasn't in the field. So I guess that was bullshit, too. But we can talk about him, I guess, next year. So.
Yeah, that's it for this golf season. He didn't play. I don't think he played at all, right? He didn't play any of the majors, any of the tournaments.
He hasn't played last August at the tournament right before the FedEx playoffs. So, no, he hasn't played all year.
Wow, look at that. Yeah, the guy's probably getting pretty old. But let's now get to the subject at hand. And, yes, this Open Championship at Royal Troon really, really was great. And the weather, you know, may have been a factor. But overall, it was just amazing golf. Like, it just, everybody was hitting their spots. And so while it was just a two-man tournament, it was really fun. It was like, as someone was saying, it was like match play. So we'll begin with Mike and get his assessment of this final two rounds. And Mickelson was really just playing great golf, and Stenson was also playing great golf right along with him. But Stenson was just that much better. What do you think the difference was between the two, and what was your takeaway from this incredible moment in golf?
It's a tournament that I have not personally seen anything like in my lifetime. I guess the obvious comparison was the duel in the sun between Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus at Turnberry in 77, I think, where the two of them just went and ran away from the field, and you know, it was essentially match play. You know, we have seen a number of players run away with majors in like the last 5 years. McIlroy, obviously, a couple times. And then even a guy like Martin Keimer, and, you know, Louis Oosthuizen into it, the 2010 British Open. So, you know, we've seen, I think, performance, especially from Keimer, because that was kind of, you know, unexpected, where, you know, he was just flawless that week. But, you know, this week we saw Stenson play the best golf he will ever play in his career. And we saw Mickelson play pretty damn close to what his best, you know, has ever been. Now, he's not quite as long as he was in his prime, but, you know, ironically, that might actually be helping his game because it's slowing his swing speed down. I mean, as a result, he's more accurate. So, yeah, it was just really a compelling and exciting final round. Just the way that they both, well, Stenson started off with the free putt, and he thought, oh, here we go again. And then Mickelson, you know, goes birdie on one, eagle on four. And really just that turning point was, you know, Stenson making that 50-foot putt, and then he just slammed the door in at the end. I mean, it's really, it's just unbelievable. 63 and a 65, you've got to be kidding me. It's like, I'm having trouble describing it because I haven't seen anything like this before.
Yeah, it's true. It's amazing how well Phil played to lose, still lose. I mean, because if it was any other year on that course, he probably gets it. I mean, I think he had the best final round ever in a major on Sunday, but it still wasn't enough because you had a guy who tied the all-time low for a final round at 63. The record was held by Johnny Miller in the beginning, who was doing the telecast for NBC. So it's pretty neat to see that they were tied together. Stenson even had a chance to break it on the 17th hole, but that did not happen. So definitely a lot of fun. Let's go to John for your takeaway and the historical impact of this incredible round. Like, it was just really fun, very captivating, was it not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to feel a little bit for Mickelson. I mean, guy's kind of snake that he shoots 63 in the first round, bogey-free 65 in the final round. It's 11 shots better than third place, and he still can't win. I mean, it just goes to show you how incredible Stenson played on Sunday, and really overall for the week, but more so on Sunday. You know, he looked really shaky on the first hole and bogeys it. You think, oh, man, here we go. It's going to be the same old Henrik Stenson, you know, getting close to the lead on Sunday and can't finish it. But he birdies 10 holes and just unbelievable golf. And that was the difference with his putting on Sunday anyway. He's always known as one of the best ball strikers in the world. You certainly saw that too. I don't think he missed a single shot on Sunday. I guess you could say he did miss one. The second shot on 16 was a pretty big hook into the rough, to left of the green. But other than that, he was just flawless with his ball striking. And his putting matched up this week. He was just draining all those birdie putts and just a phenomenal display of golf. And I agree with Mike. I'd never seen anything like this. It's kind of duel where literally it was out of 150 players, it just pretty much came down to two players by Saturday afternoon. And a little bit was because of their play, obviously, and some of that too was because of the weather. They got favorable ends of the weather draw, but hey, that's not the Open Championship. You take advantage of what it gives you. But at the same time, just unbelievable play by them both, and certainly a tournament that we will remember for quite a while. We've had some classic majors lately, but you know, 10, 15 years from now, we'll look back onto the Mickelson-Stenson duel, and we'll definitely have fond memories of this one.
It's going to be, you know, we're really not going to have any reason to really get into anybody else in the field this year when it comes to the Open, because this was definitely the story all the way through. Like, it was really, we can still do surprises and disappointments if you want to, but some thoughts I had, I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking about like some of these incredible, like chipping shots. I know that Phil had a bunch of opportunities where he could have been completely taken out of the tournament. Like, he would put something way in the rough or something, or was in the sand, and he would just do a masterful job getting it back on the green or even holing it in some, maybe in a couple moments. But this guy was, and then he had these putts to save par, and they were not really the easiest of putts. They would be like, you know, like in between 10 and 15 feet. So just the kind of effort that was involved and the amount of skill with the short game was really just brilliant. So let's go back to Mike and continue on the theme of great shots and great short game. And drives too, like we were talking about. So yeah, I mean, it was really just great golf, period.
Well, I'll give you some stats here. Stenson hit 41 fairways for the week, which was fifth in the field. He averaged 297 off the tee, which is 11th, and he hit 56 greens in regulation, which was good for first. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, you're accurate, long, and you're hitting the most greens out of anyone. And he had 110 total putts, which was fourth best. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was just absolutely dominating. And then you look, he played the par 3s 5 under, the par 4s 7 under, and the par 5s 8 under. I mean, 25 birdies. It's ridiculous. You know, on British Open courses, and especially here, you have so many of those long par 4s, which can really, you know, you figure, all right, you're going to make some big numbers there. But, you know, Stenson, he really is one of the more impressive ball strikers I've personally seen. I remember at the 2013 Barclays at Liberty National, I followed him for a few holes. And, you know, he just has this... it's like this very powerful, kind of funny looking thing, but it just produces this ball flight, which is dead straight and has this soaring trajectory. And the guy is just, you know, he's a lot like Lee Westwood was when he was better, you know, great ball striker, but, you know, would always get cheeky with the putter. So really what happened here is Stenson, you know, he had a good week putting, and I think a big factor in that, and to go to help Phil too, was that they really played these greens slow because they were anticipating like 30 mile an hour winds on some of the days, but it didn't really quite get to that. So they were only stimping at like 10, I think, which is very slow for a professional tournament. And, you know, when you get older, the hands get a little shaky, but, you know, they were having to hit these putts so hard, I think it kind of took the nerves, you know, out of the stroke a little bit, and it helped both of them. So, but still, how the two of them managed, just to have the stars align like this, it's shocking. You know, it's a shame that someone had to lose.
I couldn't agree more on that. It was I also had the feeling watching the end of that tournament that this was going to be the last shot for either one of these guys. Like, I thought, whoever loses this might be it. Like, they may not have another shot at a major. So I felt like my heart was going for Stenson in that round because he had not had the major championship yet. And I really think this brings our entire saga of doing these podcasts full circle, because in the very first show, maybe it was the first show or this one after, but we were talking about Stenson being a big player in the field at that time. So he was one of the world's best golfers then, and I think he may even be that now. And so to do that and not have a major must be a very frustrating situation. But for somebody that talented off the tee, it really is tremendous to see him to see him on top. So I was very happy for him. I would also have been happy for Mickelson, too, though, if he got it, though, because he just played brilliantly. I mean, I just loved how he was just rescuing himself off the course, throughout the tournament. So it was really interesting to see that, too. So, John, your thoughts about Stenson's vindication after, you know, a couple near misses over the years in the majors. What do you think Stenson is now with his career?
Well, I mean, he was always regarded as one of the better players in the world. I mean, I'm thinking maybe 3 years ago, he won the FedEx Cup and he won the money title in Europe. So, I mean, he's always been a world-class player. It's just the major championship is what he was missing. You know, he never really, I honestly can't think of a time before this week when he really contended to win. I mean, I know he had some top four, top five finishes, but when he really had an actual chance to win the tournament, I can't think of a tournament. Maybe Mike can has a better memory than me, but he just never really performed well in majors. And good for him to finally put it all together for a week. And who knows? I mean, he's only 40 years old. And one thing about golf is you can play pretty well, you know, for the next, I would say, until he's probably about 47, 48. I mean, Mickelson's 46, and he's still...
That's true. I didn't think of that.
...for majors. I mean, I wouldn't... You know, you said you would, you know, rule him out. I wouldn't necessarily rule him out. I'm not going to say he's going to be a contender at every major, but he'll pop up like this, you know, every once in a while. Over the next, I'd say, maybe 4 or 5 years, I'll have another chance to win one. I definitely think this validates Stenson's career and as one of the better European players of the last 10, 15 years. And he's certainly not at the level of, say, a Nick Faldo or Ernie Els, he's not a European, but Nick Faldo and those guys from Europe who've won multiple majors, but he's certainly right up there, higher than, like, say, Lee Westwood, who's been one of the better players in Europe, and he hasn't won a major. Definitely validates his career, and he might win a couple more. If he certainly puts on a ball striking and putting performance like he did this weekend, he certainly will. So I'm not going to say this will be his only major. I think he'll definitely contend for some more.
I think it's really funny that you bring up how he hadn't really been as that close in terms of, like, you know, let's say there hasn't been the kind of drama that where he would have been close to winning it, or maybe he had a lead and he blew it. Like none of that was happening up to this point. That's an interesting observation, because when you really think about it, you're right. I was thinking, well, I know that he's finished near the top in a couple of years, but it may have been just at the end, you know, like he started to rebound. So let's go to Mike and see if that was consistent with what John was saying. Do you feel the same way? Did you remember him being close to a major at one point in a spiritual level?
He was pretty close in the 2013 British Open. He finished second, and he shot even par in the final round, and that's when, you know, Phil won with that 66. So I know he was also close in the PGA that year, too, at least at one point during the round. But what happened with Stenson is, okay, he breaks onto the scene, in Europe in the 90s. Well, he didn't get his first one before 2001. But, he wins a couple big tournaments. He comes over here and wins in Harbortown in 2004. He wins the Dubai Desert Classic, the WGC Match Play in 2007. But then he just went into this, complete tailspin. He fell to, like, 230th in the world, and I actually left A1 the Players in 2009. But then he went on this, like, swoon where he couldn't hit the driver at all. I mean, he still really doesn't. What he does is he plays a 13-degree 3-wood, which is, for all intents and purposes, a 2-wood. But, he just completely lost his confidence. But he came back at a level that really he wasn't at before. And, I think John was right. We hadn't seen him, for that in that many major championships. He really only started to become a contender, when he made his comeback, which was 2013. But, he just won up. It seems like he shows up at big tournaments, non-major big tournaments, I should say. So I guess that's why we can that's why I wasn't really surprised that he would win a major. Because, he won basically every other big regular event you can have, the Match Play, the FedEx Cup, the Race to Dubai, the Players. So, I don't know if he will win again, because, he's kind of a quirky guy, and a lot of times he has trouble keeping his composure on the golf course. We've seen him snap clubs on occasion. It just gets really frustrated when the putting doesn't go well. But, that wasn't a problem this week. And for Phil, I think I'll say this because, since Mike Francesa was just basically, you know, accusing Ortiz of being on steroids this year. You know, they don't test for HGH in golf. So if we want to apply his logic on David Ortiz to Phil Mickelson, we can say that's the reason. I don't really think it is. I think he's just, you know, swinging more under control. And if you look at the history of players who have done well late in their career, they all have had very long swings. And for some reason, that they age well. Like Sam Snead had this very long swing that went past parallel. But, you know, it is surprising that Phil's doing this. Yeah, 46, that's very, very old for a golfer. Usually, you know, that's about it. But, and I've been saying that, you know, I think, oh, this is probably the last time we'll see Phil. This is the last time. But he keeps doing it. So, I don't know. The guy keeps going. But, honestly, you know, I think maybe it was a bit of karma that he didn't win because, you know, the guy's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Why are you taking, you know, bogus stock clips and doing stuff like that? I mean, come on. Don't be greedy.
Wait, what was this again? He was taking bonus tournaments or what was the story?
No, he had like insider trading, but he didn't get charged.
Right. Oh, man, that was brutal. That's right. Oh, man. You're better than that, Phil. You are. And I remember Mike was defending that, too. It was pretty funny. Okay, so I guess we'll give it to John for any final analysis on the pairing. I mean, it really was great. Like, again, you know, we certainly have established a lot. And so let me just pass that. Let's get on to the next agenda item, which would be what? Well, I mean, at this point, I mean, that, like I said, that was basically the tournament. So, I mean, to really expand on the rest of the field, I think we can, but I'm not going to have much to say about it. So why don't we begin with John? Any surprises and disappointments or anything you wanted to bring up? And, you know, if you don't, that's fine, too. So we'll give it to you now for your look at who else was in the field this weekend.
I don't know, Dave. I mean, like, there was no one that really missed the cut that surprised me. I mean, pretty much all the top golfers made the cut. I mean, not all of them played well. You know, Dustin Johnson really couldn't get anything going, and then when he finally did get something going on Saturday, he thought he might make a move, and he made a 7 or an 8 on the 11th hole. It was just dreadful. But again, he's in the top 10. You pick him in fantasy golf every week, he's going to give you a top 10 every week. He's just so consistent. He'll be right there at the PGA next week. I would be shocked if he wasn't in the mix. I don't know what was up with Jason Day. He just did not have a good week. I didn't get to see much of his game. Spieth has just been off all year.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on with him. McIlroy actually had a pretty good week, finishing in the top 5. He had a nice round on Sunday. He had that one moment where he was like broke his club head after he had such a bad shot. He like slammed it in the ground and the club head went flying. That was pretty interesting. And but hey, you know, top 5 for him. Top 5, but he's still like 13 shots behind. You know, both, as we talked about, Stenson and Mickelson were pretty much playing a different tournament. I mean, there really isn't much else to mention for the rest of the field. I will say, I don't know if you guys watched the coverage on Sunday, but how big of an idiot is Matt Kuchar? Did you guys see how he played the 8th hole? It's that 100-yard par 3. It would seem like an easy shot. So he hits it in the bunker, but he's like too close to the lip or whatever, so he has to play like 30 yards behind him into the rough. And I'm just like, dude, you're fucking 20 shots behind the lead. Just go with the flag. Who cares if you're going to, like, it was just mind-boggling to me. So he's 30 yards behind the bunker now. So his third shot, he doesn't hit it high enough on the green, so he rolls back into the same bunker he just was in. I said, okay, who's going to go with the flag now? I mean, he's hitting 4. He fucking hits it behind the green, behind the bunker again, 30 yards, the same exact shot. And he's like, are you doing this right now? And then he finally gets it on the green and makes 2 putts for like a 7 or 8 on a par 3. 100 yards, a par 3. I know the hole is difficult, but come on. It's like, go for it. Who cares? That just really annoyed me to see that. Like, he put it in the bunker the second time. Go with the hole. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, I digress. That really annoyed me. I guess I was just kind of surprised that not only was one guy able to have a great score, but just two guys, just, it's just fascinating that those two played the course so well compared to everybody else. Like in any other tournament, you know, Mickelson wins that by like 10 shots. So that was just really surprising to me how two guys who played the course so well. I'm surprised that no one could get up like around like say 10 under and be like 5 or 6 shots behind them. Like they were literally 11 clear of everyone else. So that was kind of surprising that not a third player, maybe not was as good as them, but kind of like halfway, like around 9 or 10 under. So I guess that was another surprise.
Oh yeah, I mean I don't like you guys have been saying. I really haven't seen anything like it. Like it's really a unique experience watching such greatness, and like you said, two guys doing it at the same time really just created the kind of showdown that you know you live for, you really hope for in golf. So, that's what's really incredible. Like. You know, when it happens, you just got to soak it in. And I think we did on this particular weekend. So it was really a lot of fun over at Royal Troon. So let's go back to Mike and get your surprises and disappointments. And again, this year it's going to be short. Like, there's not going to be much to say about the rest of the field. But we'll give it to you anyway. And let me know what you thought about the rest of the group.
Well, it was an interesting comment by Johnny Miller, you know, when McIlroy broke the club. He flips out and just says that he's more interested in wearing tight shirts and showing off his muscles. Which, yeah, I think Johnny's paying a little bit too close of attention to Rory's feet with that comment. You know, there is a theory that Johnny Miller's career fell apart because he bought like a ranch someplace during the offseason and he would chop wood to keep in shape and he bulked up and it fucked up the swing. But I think with you know having a professional being in charge of your workout routine, you wouldn't get yourself muscle down. But I don't know, you know, Johnny Miller's getting old, so that was just weird. Another solid performance by Beef, Andrew Johnson. Eighth place finish, so a top 10 for him. Now, this is hilarious. If you finished in ninth place, you were 18 strokes behind Henrik Stenson. So you get a top 10 in a major, and you're 18 strokes behind the winner. I mean, oh, God. It's just crazy. You know, Patrick Reed, he had that nice first round, but he fell apart the second round. And that guy's kind of a mongrel. That's really what happened. You know, a lot of guys went low because it was pretty tame out there on Thursday. And, you know, Stenson actually, he was in 12th place. So from Stenson to go from 2 under to shoot 18 under par over the last 3 rounds, it's just ridiculous. Here's a big surprise. Steve Stricker, is he even, like, playing regularly anymore? Like, how did he even get into the field? I remember when he was good in like 2011, but for some reason he didn't want to travel and play the British Open. It's like, oh, I just want to play the John Deere after he like did well at the U.S. Open. Like, dude, why are you skipping the fucking major championship? It's the only tournament that anyone is going to fucking care about when your career is all said and done, but you want to play the John Deere. So I don't know why. What are you doing here? He's at 49, I think, but a fourth place finish. Sergio Garcia, another top 5. Oh, God. I don't think he's going to win one at this point. It's not like he was in it at any point, but, yeah, it's just funny to see him tied for 5th. Another nice finish, but no cigar. With Jordan Spieth, like John said, you know, his ball striking's just been off all year, and you're not going to win major championships hitting the ball at the Yeah, the thing is, like, we didn't see much of the field on Saturday and Sunday because there's no point in watching them.
Right. That's true. They're so far ahead. Like, why would we cut to someone that was 20 strokes back? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's a good point. Let's then dig into a couple of the other areas tonight. Then I know we're going to have some extra time, so let's just get right to the telecast thoughts. And the telecast moves from ESPN to NBC and Golf Channel. So this year, NBC finally gets a major back. Finally, they were only without a major for a year, actually, if you think about it. So here they are doing the Open, and it has the same feel as we had for the previous U.S. Open telecast it used to do. And really the only difference is that now they have Mike Tirico, who hosts the coverage, who just left ESPN. I mean, only days before, he was covering the UEFA Championship for ESPN. And then all of a sudden, he's doing some commentary and hosting for NBC and Golf Channel. So it's pretty neat to see Tirico back at it. I thought he did a pretty good job. And I as for the other commentators, I thought just about what they would come to expect. So this is really more of a field for John and Mike to assess. We'll go to Mike first. Mike, your thoughts about the NBC coverage, certainly a step up from Fox, but overall, what did you think of their first Open Championship?
I think as expected. It was Golf Channel, NBC. They do a ton of tournaments every year. It was going to be well coordinated. It was like getting the U.S. Open back again, except one person was not present in the coverage who would be there with Tirico. And then you had Nick Faldo and Barry on earlier. So, it was interesting. But I don't have much really to say about it. They did their job. There wasn't anything really controversial to talk about. I mean, I guess people were complaining that they were showing too many commercials in comparison to the, but when you're on the air for as long as they were, I mean, they showed did they show the entire first round? Because they started with the first tee shot. So, just an incredible, amount of time that they were able to dedicate to live golf. So I guess it's a good thing that we have, Golf Channel now in the mix, because, they obviously have nothing else to put on Thursday and Friday. So, no Joe Buck, no, weird, Fox is just, you could tell that they're really not, they're not really up to snuff,
Right.
You have TV and NBC and they know how to do this. So,
yeah,
not much really to say about it. It was fine.
And I think that's a good thing. I think that's the sign of a very quality, solid broadcast. And I pretty much had the same opinion. Like, when you don't have a lot to say about the telecast, that means you're doing a pretty good job. So that's our take. Let's go to John. What did you think of the NBC telecasting quality this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they do a number of tournaments a year. So, they're used to, not like Fox parachuting in for one tournament and you won't hear from them again for another year. They clearly have the experience doing tournaments, and let's say it didn't get in the way of you enjoying the broadcast. And that's the thing. You don't want to have to think about the announcers or what they're saying. I mean, Johnny Miller is, he is what he is. I think sometimes he is a little, he's like a little, I won't say too critical, but like he said before a guy gets into play, he says, "Oh, that's going to be a real easy putt," as to like almost knock them afterwards if they miss it, or I don't know. His stick sometimes is a little too much for me. But overall, I mean, it's fine. We get to see David Faraday in a kilt, and they made sure we knew he was wearing one about 10 times during the broadcast. That was a little annoying, but I think he did a great job.
Yeah, I agree.
The depth of using his skills, as much as they can, as they should. I think he might be a replacement for Johnny Miller when his time is up. We'll see about that. But overall, it was good. And like Mike said, the coverage just unbelievable. I didn't get up to watch at 1:30, but that's at 1:30 a.m. they were on, and they did show the whole first and second round. So you can't ask for anything more than that as a golf fan. So a very good first year for them covering the Open.
Well said, everybody. Good job, everyone. Let's now look ahead. We have plenty of time tonight to cover this. So, Mike, I'm thrilled for you that you're going to get to attend the PGA Championship this year, which will be at Baltusrol Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey. So, tell us a little bit about the course and what we will expect over there in New Jersey.
Well, I've never been there before, but it's A.W. Tillinghast course. So it's pretty, I was looking at the layout. It's pretty similar to Ridgewood, I guess, maybe with a little bit more water in the mix. A lot of dog legs. If you can remember what Ridgewood was like for the Barclays and, Bethpage Black, but not quite as severe. But, it is a tough course. It's going to play like a 75 or close to 7,500 yards as a par 70. I think Phil Mickelson won the last time he played it there, and I think he only finished 5 under. But I don't know. The way that it all depends on how they set it up. It's interesting. They do end with consecutive par fives. The 17th is like 650 yards, but then the 18th is a dogleg over the water, but it's reachable in 2. So you could have potential for a very exciting finish. It's a very elite membership that, will not let you in if you're not a WASP. So it'll be nice that I'll be able to be on their grounds for the entire week, although if they get a wind of this podcast, I'll probably be barred. Considered like a top 100 course in the world. It hosted the U.S. Open, I think maybe 7 times, quite a number of times. Jack Nicklaus won that 1980 U.S. Open, I believe. It should be a solid venue.
Absolutely. Very nice. Glad you have the privilege of checking that out in person. I look forward to your recap when we do the PGA podcast later on this summer. It's not going to be that long, only like 2 weeks from now, right?
Yeah, next that's week. Right, Dave. Yep, we have the Canadian Open this week, and then next week's the PGA.
Look at that.
We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yep, and this is because of the Olympics this year, which has a golf tournament. We're going to get to that in a minute, but first let's get to John for your outlook on what's coming up, and you can certainly throw in some Canadian Open thoughts. This compressed schedule definitely is throwing some stuff off for golfers. Some guys can't attend certain events, and you even have people dropping out of the Olympics, which we're going to get to in a minute, but let's first look at these next two tournaments. What is to come from your perspective? What do you think you'll be looking most forward to, and what do we expect in the next couple weeks?
I will not throw in a Canadian Open thought. there's no reason to. I mean, I'll watch it on Saturday and Sunday. Jason Day and Dustin Johnson will be there. Other than that, I mean, unless you're a diehard golf fan, there's really no reason to watch. I'm sure it'll be exciting, but the 18th hole on that course is pretty exciting at Glen Abbey. Par 5 over the water will produce an exciting finish. So definitely check it out on Sunday, but that's my only – will not provide any other thoughts on the Canadian Open. As for the PGA, it's interesting, with that Baltusrol, they're actually showing the replay from 2005 on the Golf Channel right now, that kind of have in the background. And what I remember about this tournament was the 2 par 5s, like Mike had mentioned, you said it's a par 70, so I'm assuming it plays 34, 36, which is interesting. The guys won't have the par 5s until their last two holes. And the last time it was played here, if there was a huge thunderstorm that blew through, like right when the leaders were like on the 15th or 16th hole, and it forced them to go to a Monday finish. And if that didn't happen, Tiger Woods was in the clubhouse at like 2 under, and he might have won the tournament. So the golf gods or the weather gods or something didn't want Tiger to win this one. So the next day, obviously the rain blew through, and the course softened up just a bit for the last couple holes, and Mickelson ended up winning. But only 5 under for a PGA is very a high score. I mean, usually you see the PGA at 13, 14 under, that kind of deal. So it'll be a tough test, and I'm definitely looking forward to watching it on TV, and we'll get Mike's report in a couple weeks. So definitely looking forward to this PGA. And the week after that is the tournament that I'll be going to here right in my backyard, the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, which got moved, shuffled around because of the schedule this year. So definitely looking forward to that. As of right now, not many names that I want to see have committed to the field. I think right now our headliners are Bubba Watson and Matt Kuchar. So right now, I don't know if I'll be attending or I'll be watching them too at the event. But, we'll always have a good time, and I'm sure between now and then we'll get some other commitments to play. But it'll be good. So the next 3 weeks are pretty good for golf. And then, of course, we have the Olympics, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But, those are my thoughts for the upcoming weeks.
You could be looking at America's Olympic hopefuls, Matt Kuchar and Bubba Watson, John.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man. Well, I think Patrick Reed is going to be coming here, too. So I guess, you know what, I could go watch them. But I'll probably end up following, you know, some of these guys that no one has heard of, but like that I'll pick for my fantasy golf team, like someone like Harold Varner. I'm sure Dave, you never heard of him. Mike probably has. He's been a consistent fantasy golf player for me all year. And I'll probably go watch him, so, or someone like that.
Very neat. I would actually, if we have enough time, maybe I could pick your brain about fantasy golf too. That's actually cool to see about to get a reveal on a sleeper pick. That's pretty cool. So, Mike, let's see. I think we've covered most of the PGA stuff at this point. So let's get now to the. We could get the Travelers in on there. Did you want to? Is there anything you had in as far as the Travelers?
Yeah, I guess with the Travelers, I know they used to do this. I'm not sure if they're still doing it, but don't they give like a couple of the top? Isn't it like a couple of high-ranking amateurs will make their professional debuts there. They'll give them sponsor exemptions into the field. I know they did that, like, a few years ago. Patrick Cantlay played there. So if someone's good, a high-ranking amateur is making his pro debut there, I don't know. I haven't really paid attention, to be honest. This Olympic golf, I mean, what a disaster it turned out. And
right.
No one wants to be in it because you're not... They know, and it's not about Zika, and it's not about Brazil being dangerous, really. It's, you know, they don't want to focus their time on something they know is going to mean nothing when ultimately their careers are judged in history. So say, oh, well, you won a gold medal at the Olympics. Yeah, but you know, that's not what golf's about. They don't give a shit. And frankly, you're going to be playing against guys who have no business playing against PGA Tour level professionals. So, you know, just make it an amateur event if they want to do it. Now, I think, frankly, golf in the Summer Olympics, it doesn't make sense just because, you know, the size of the venue you need and just logistically tough to do it. So, yeah, it was just, I understand why they wanted to do it, because it gets governments to invest money into golf, but who cares, really? And, you know, we basically have a born-again Christian contingent going over, so great way to display America to the world.
All right, John, I'll give it to you as far as the Olympic stuff.
Yeah, this is going to be really bad. I just pulled up the list of players, and I'm going to read to you the last 10 players on this list, and this is really bad. Mike is exactly right when he says, why would, like, Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth want to go play against these guys? I'm just going to read their names, all right?
All right.
Chen Xiangyang from Chinese Taipei, Adelson Silva from Brazil, Seamus Power from Ireland. He must have taken McIlroy's spot. I don't know. Morten Folkstad from Norway. Rupe Kako from Finland. Nino Bertasio from Italy. Sudhakar Rahman from something called BAN. I don't even know what the abbreviation stands for. Camilo Villegas. I know him. Somehow he's ranked number 57 on this list. He must really suck if these guys are better than him. Wen Tang Lin from another one from Chinese Taipei, Angelo Kuei from the Philippines, and then the last guy, Gavin Kyle Green. He has three names apparently from MAS. I'm assuming that's maybe Malaysia.
I think it's Malaysia. Yeah.
Yeah. So even if you go before that, like players ranked 30 for 40, I could go all day. This is just ridiculous. I mean, the casual golf fan has literally probably only heard of the top. That's 5-6 guys on this list. It's going to be a complete disaster. If they had it in a different spot other than Brazil, I think many of these guys might have gone. If this was, you know, 2012 in London, I definitely think this would have been a better field. I know, Mike said about, you don't think it's about being about Brazil. I think it is a little bit, But at the same time, you're right. When it's, this means nothing to these guys, it's not like a track star or someone throwing the javelin. This is all that they work their entire life for, to go to the Olympics. I mean, these guys are playing in, you know, four majors a year. That's what means most to them. So it's gonna be such a shit show. And honestly, I hope that one of those guys that I just read, you know, Rupi Kakko from Finland, I hope he wins it. So we have to, you know, I don't know. It's gonna be ridiculous. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to watch. I'll try to watch a little bit just so we can have some fun with it. But it's gonna be bad.
Yeah, it's going to be bad, and I think, putting Ricky Fowler aside, who's a pretty good, you know, he seems like a humble guy anyway. He seems like I know he's a clown, but he's not nearly as annoying as Kuchar and Bubba Watson. I mean, this is probably one of the toughest. Like, you know, normally when you talk about keeps for USA, you're like, all right, USA, but these guys, like, I don't know if I'm gonna have quite the same level of enthusiasm for this group because these guys are just so. Some of these guys are tough to take. Oh, I didn't give that to anybody. Okay, well, it's gonna be nuts. I don't know. Like you said, I mean, what else are you gonna be watching about that time of the year? But I think one of the reasons, just going back to your other point, John, and I'm just kidding with that whole thing. I mean, obviously everyone's gonna root for USA, but. As far as this tournament, one of the reasons I think people are coming out of it is because, as you mentioned, like, you just have to dedicate time to it. It throws off your schedule. I think people just don't want to be thrown off on the schedule with these tournaments. And I do think that there's an element of structure to a golfer's schedule. And I feel like if that's disrupted, it can be a problem. I'm not sure if that's a real thing, but it just seems like that way to me with some of these golfers. Mike, do you feel like the structure of the schedule being skewed for this tournament has hurt the golf, the entirety of pro golf for the most part? I mean, it didn't hurt this tournament, but I'm just talking about in general, like the whole season.
I don't think it's that big of a deal that we're going to do this once where we have these the last three majors basically, you know, back to back. But then, I mean, I can't believe the PGA Championship is next week. It feels like we were talking about the U.S. Open yesterday.
Yeah.
But, they didn't think this out very well. Has it really affected any fields significantly? I don't know. I mean, really the big thing that happened on the PGA Tour this year was that terrible flooding at Greenbrier where they had to actually cancel the tournament. Did some damage to the course. So, and it's a very nice course, too. Yeah, they restored it back to the C.P. McDonald design. That's a very classic place. So, it's too bad that happened. Then I guess playing the WGC Bridgestone when they did. But now, the Bridgestone is traditionally played between two majors anyway. So, and also the Canadian Open. Glen Abbey's actually been sold, but there's some problem with when they're going to start building, so they're basically going to just keep playing that tournament there every year until finally start building houses there. Too bad, because it's not like a great course, but it does have that great finishing hole, finishing at the 18th. But John reading off those names, I mean, this is just ridiculous. I'm looking at the field now. We're like, who is Nino Bastasco with? Wen Tu Lin, Gavin Kiley? Mateo Manassero managed to qualify because he had that great week. But, I mean, this is just a joke. This is a web.com tour field would smoke some of that. So,
honestly, they're playing PGA Tour had an event the same week as the Olympics. The John Deere Classic is that week, and it'll probably have, other than the top, four Americans and a couple other guys in the field, like, Jeff DeRose and Sergio Garcia, those kind of guys. Other than the top, five or six guys, the John Deere Classic will have a better field than the Olympic golf tournament, absolutely, without a doubt.
Wow. That's not surprising, though, right?
I think if we had said that last year, it would have been surprising. Mm. But then everyone said, "No, Zika, I'm out."
That's a good point. You know, and just to bring it all home, I really did think, I think we all could agree that it really seemed like a pretty good idea on paper at the time when they proposed the idea of an Olympic tournament for golf, but it just didn't work out. I think a lot of factors have played into it. I think all of the above could be part of the reason why this has not been a good field. I mean, just the fact that it's scheduled a little earlier. So there are some Olympics that are played in September, so that might have helped a little bit. But whatever the case may be, the location, the climate, political and like weather climate, the issue of virus, of disease, I mean, all of these things have tied into it, I think. But for whatever the reason is, it definitely does not seem like it has worked out. And so we will see. So let's go now to the open forum, and we can continue to talk about this Olympic tournament if you want, but I'll give it to John first, and I'll give you the chance to really comment on anything going on in golf that you would like to bring up. I know that we've got about a year now without the anchored putter, and so that has certainly made for some more even, it kind of evens out the playing field a little bit. You know, Adam Scott's one of the guys, speaking of the anchored putter, who did also bowed out of the Olympic competition. I'm kind of interested to see what you think of him this year now that he doesn't have the anchored putter. Like you said, he wasn't even good with it, so is he about the same as you've expected him to be over the years? And then we'll give it to you for the other golf thoughts. John.
I mean, he won two tournaments earlier this year and looked like he was doing pretty well, but he sucks pretty bad since. So, I don't know, maybe he was just hitting the ball so close in those two tournaments he really didn't have to putt, but I haven't really seen much of his shots, but like I said, he won the two tournaments in Florida and just hasn't done anything since. So I don't know. I haven't looked at the stats, but I would assume that his putting isn't very good. He's always a good ball striker. I'm assuming that's his problem. That he's lately, the last couple of months, he just hasn't done well putting. As for other, anything else going on in the world of golf, I mean, I was going to mention Tiger, but Mike mentioned that earlier in the show. I mean, really, honestly, I don't want to put any money down on this, but I would make a bet that he might never play again. Like, he's just completely done.
Yeah.
Like, his back, his knees, just everything. And he's, for all the things shit we say about Tiger on the show, he's a proud guy. And like, he knows he doesn't want to go out there and embarrass himself. And so, I don't know, he just might kind of slowly go off into the sunset, and he wants to play, but I don't know if he'll ever play again. It's just kind of my feeling, I don't know. Maybe I'll be completely wrong, and he'll be back for the Masters next year, but I just kind of got the feeling this might be it for him.
You know, it is a year of retiring legends, isn't it? We had Kobe retire, we had Tim Duncan retire, we were having Big Papi retire, so there's certainly been a lot of that going on. We had Peyton Manning retire after the Super Bowl, so Tiger Woods could be next in line. It would certainly be the time of year for that, wouldn't it? Because of the way things are going in sports. And he's played a very long time, I think. So he's had quite a full career. This could be it. Maybe you're right, John. Let's go to Mike. Could this be the end of the road for Tiger Woods altogether?
If he's so badly injured that he can't practice enough to be able to be somewhat competitive, then yeah, maybe it's possible. But I think that he has exemptions into the Masters forever, that at some point he'll be healthy enough that he can have some sort of form where will allow him to show up. Because if Augusta National, really, that's a course knowledge there is just so important. And he, even when he was hitting the ball all over the place, he would know where to miss. So I'd be very surprised if he never played again. I think you'll definitely see him at the Masters in the future. But how much he'll play besides that, I don't know. Because he won so many times, he has a lifetime exemption on the PGA Tour. So I see him showing up at Torrey Pines. I don't know, the Bridgestone's at WGC, so he can't get that. But it's courses that he likes, maybe. Or if the major's at a certain venue that he likes, he might show up. But he really just screwed himself up
so badly that I don't think we're going to see him playing a full schedule going forward. And now that's not. I know that we, over the years we've gotten on, not really Tiger, more so the media coverage. But if he can't really play again, you wouldn't want to see him go out like that. Now that'd be a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, that's no way to go, ending on an injury in that fashion. I mean, maybe he would try to go at least one more tournament, one more event, and just wrap it up that way. Maybe even his own event in Sherwood Country Club if he still does that. I think he still does that. At least hosts it. I don't know if he plays it, but I think he's got some part of it on some level. So, Mike, let's go back to any other thoughts you had on your mind with the world of golf.
Okay. What was it? The U.S. Women's Open, because they have like 8 majors on the LPGA.
Right.
This poor Anna Nordqvist literally moves a grain of sand in a fairway bunker, and she's deemed to have grounded her club, is given a 2-stroke penalty, and she did lose by 3 in the playoff, but she didn't give a shit. It's so bad that they're allowing slow motion HD replays to determine whether or not someone violated a rule. Because I saw Graham McDowell at the Barclays 2011. He definitely grounded his club in a bunker, but he wasn't on TV, and he didn't get called for it. So it's funny. Fox has 2 straight events, and the USGA 2 straight events that really they fucked up with these rulings. And I know that technically it is, you can't ground your club in a bunker, but she literally moved a grain of fucking sand and you take 2 strokes away from that. Like, how the people that hate golf are going to see something like that and go, well, what a dumb sport. So the USGA, they really need to get their act together with what they're doing. Maybe look at intent more so, and like effect of a rule that you break. Because really, if you actually go and try to read through the rule book, you basically need a fucking law degree to understand that. It's just so overly complicated and ridiculous. It's not good that on big stages like that, they're allowing that things like that are happening. So, bad job, USGA, once again.
Oh, gosh. USGA after it again. My goodness. I think that's my one complaint about golf. There's just too many silly, over-the-top rules. It just gets old after a while. And I know the NFL's getting in that direction, too. Just too many stupid little rules. Let's just bring it to John, since this is a great topic, Mike. Have the rules gone awry? Are there too many little complications with the golf game's rule book?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, when I played junior golf back in the day, they gave you a rules test, and it was, really serious. I can only imagine, the PGA Tour pros have to literally know every, it'll be, rule 1, subsection A, line B, paragraph C, sentence 5 says that you can't put your ball, blah, 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 do this and that. So it's really kind of ridiculous. I mean, they should definitely make it more simplified, and they should just use common sense when it comes to enforcing the rules. It's just, I don't know, they just make so many stupid decisions, and it takes away the enjoyment and the thrill of watching some of these tournaments with the way these rules are decided. Like Mike said, it was a grain of sand. Did that really affect her shot or improve her chances of winning? Because it moved by literally a grain of sand touched her club in the bunker. I mean, they got to use common sense when it comes to these rules. And who knows? I doubt the USGA will ever rewrite the rule book. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. If a tournament ends in such a huge controversy, maybe if what had happened to Dustin Johnson and he ended up losing the tournament, maybe some things could have been changed. But until then, I unfortunately think the USGA will continue with their ridiculous rules, and we'll just have to suffer through them. I know as a casual golfer and someone who plays again, like this golf league I play in, and we have our own rules, but it's just, it's common sense. When you hit the ball in the woods, you drop two club lengths to where you went in, and well, you go on from there. I mean, it's not, you do need rules to some extent, but you don't need to get to this ridiculous point where, well, like you said, you're looking at a 50-inch, you know, flat screen, high definition TV for grains of sand that are moving the buckles. It's just crazy.
The worst one I ever remember, and this is probably what started the entire run of USGA is ridiculous kind of complaints, is when some guy called the USGA, or they called the network, or they called somebody. Some guy watching it on TV called and then complained about an infraction, and then they docked the guy a penalty stroke for it. It's like, because some guy called? I mean, what kind of a rat is this guy that would be calling a network just because he was like the ultimate CNF? So that's kind of the attitude that you see with these kind of regulations. Now, just a quick question, and then we'll wrap it up. Mike, is this more of a problem with the USGA? Is this sort of them having an ego trip more than, let's say, the PGA, like what you would see in the PGA Tour?
Well, the problem with the USGA is they say they're trying to grow the game, but yeah, they passed a rule this year that you technically cannot enter a score in that would count for your handicap play alone. Now, why would you, if you want to actually establish a serious handicap to play in something competitive, why would you lie about it and then go and get your ass kicked? So how does that encourage people, encourage growth? And plus, too, really, if you're not down like into a single digit, high single digit or a 10, do you really have to follow the rules exactly as they are? I mean, just try to make it more fun. You know, it's not an easy sport, and you know, it, just for someone trying to learn the game, if they're, you know, presented with all these rules and that are just so complicated and it can be so penal. I mean, I think they're hurting the sport, really. They're not growing the game, but these group of elites say public courses are closing down all over the place. And it's too bad, really. You know, they're just, you know, they're run by
nerds.
I don't know. Yeah. People that
oh well, that's too bad. It really is, because like golf can be much bigger than just a bunch of little regulations, and if people make that more important than the big picture, I mean, that's the worst thing you could see in sports, when guys just miss the big picture. And that's always very annoying. It's annoying in football too. It's annoying in baseball. It's annoying in every sport. So that's a bummer. So yeah, that's it for tonight. I think we pretty much covered it all tonight, everybody. John, I'll give it to you for any final thoughts for about anything, and then we'll go ahead and close it up.
Well, I'm good, Dave. Unless you want to start getting to Republican National Convention coverage, I think we could hang up the phone, so I think we're good.
But what about Ted Cruz tonight, man? You didn't endorse anybody. Okay.
Yeah, he got booed off the stage. That was actually pretty interesting.
Right? Wasn't that funny? He went through this long conversation about some girl name. What was her name? Charlotte or Gray? Oh, I forgot what her name was. But, and then the whole thing is like, you see Donald Trump walking through the door, and he just did not even say the name Trump. So it's clear that he had no interest in endorsing him whatsoever. Hence the boo. So I just thought it was pretty funny. All right, Mike, final thoughts?
Yeah. I'm not going to comment on the Republican National Convention.
Right.
You know, they're fun. You know, if Donald Trump wins the election, you know, I think I'll just take some acid and see where it goes. We'll get to find out if he's actually this crazy, or if he's really just, you know, friends with the Clintons and trying to get Hillary. Because it does seem like he's you know, not trying very hard, or at least, screw it. We don't need to get into this. I'll tell you, Mike McLeod, the Devils' first pick in the draft this year,
my God, this guy, they had their development camp Saturday. This guy can, they're saying he might make the team as a first-year player. So I guess that's why I was a little shaky on the open, because I was watching a Periscope stream of a Devils prospect scrimmage. So that could show you how big of a mongo I am. Better. So, I don't know. Oh, we do have the Ryder Cup this year, so that should be fun. We'll see if the USA can actually win, but probably lose again, because I don't know. I get, for some reason, there's just no camaraderie with them. Yeah, you know, the Europeans, I don't know, they own us in that for some reason. Although, you know, I do tend to root for Europe in the Ryder Cup, because I guess the players there align more closely with you know, my values as compared to the Americans.
Cool beans, cool beans, cool deal, everybody. Well, fellas, thank you very much tonight. Have a great rest of your week, and we're back at it in 2 weeks from now. So, fellas, once again, all the best, and good luck with your golf game. We'll do it again for the PGA Championship, and enjoy the tournament too, Mike.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Good times. Is this going to be your first major? Like, is this going to be it, like, as far as being in the building or being in attendance?
Oh, no. I was at the U.S. Open 2013 at Marion.
Oh, Marion, right? Yeah, that's right. You were there, too. That's right. That's good stuff. So, okay. So, take it easy, everybody. John, all the best. And we're probably going to see you in a little bit after. Yeah, so 2 weeks from now, we'll see you both. Take care, fellas.
Oop. All right. See you, Dave.
All right, guys.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thanks again, everybody. Well, that's our show tonight. Thanks to Mike and John. Pretty good stuff. You know, fairly short show tonight. We just, we really did boil down to two guys. And what a performance by both Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson. Neither one can really be looking down on their performance. It just so happened that only one person could win, and it was Henrik. Good times. We'll be back at it in 2 weeks. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next time.